Hello, friends. Here we are again. Welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast, proudly sponsored by Stardust Spirits. And friends, it's another one of those mornings, isn't it? Bad news, good news. Bad news, Ipswich Town lost at Old Trafford on Wednesday night, it was. Despite the fact Man United tried really hard to give them the game, Town still didn't manage it. Good news, sun is shining, at least at Heath Towers. Wolves and Leicester also lost, and Leicester, by the way, are really bad. And also, I can guarantee, friends, that Ipswich Town are going to go unbeaten this weekend because they play on Monday. See what I've done there? Lovely stuff. I'm Mark Heath. I'm joined by my two young friends and back for our first virtual chat in almost a month. Back from Seville, coughing and spluttering like he always seems to be, is AJ. How are you?
Like he always seems to be. No, this is the curse of 2025, apparently, for me, which is annoying. But yeah, other than that, I'm all right. It's weird the fact that we've not spoken virtually, at least for a month, isn't it? That's a really long time. So yeah, good to be back. Fun game to start off with, wasn't it? To come straight back into. But other than that, all good. Well, apart from, yeah, the coughing and spluttering.
Give us a brief review of Seville, because I've been to, I think, 23 countries and counting, but I've never been to Spain. How was Seville?
That's really weird that you've never been to Spain. I don't understand that. But yeah, it was really good. Brief review. Hot, less rain, lots of good food, lots of jamón, as you would say in Spain. I've eaten my body weight in different kinds of ham, which was great. Oranges, lots of nice Arabic style architecture and bits like that. Went to see the football because I have to go see the football wherever I am if there's a football game. And just nice to be away for a bit and somewhere that didn't feel freezing cold all the time.
Getting back to the UK, just a reminder of what a hole this place is, isn't it?
I landed into Luton Airport. I don't want to like slate this too much, obviously, because my girlfriend is from Luton, but landing into Luton Airport when you've the day before, I mean, I showed you the video from the Plaza de España, where it was like 25 degrees, and landing into literally a rainy Luton airport, that was
grey.
A bit of cold, a reality check.
Miserable. What was the football you went to see? Was it Sevilla?
No, it was Real Betis on the other side of Seville. So that was nice. They're in Europe, unlike Sevilla. So they were playing in the Europa Conference League against one of Ghent or Genk. I don't know. They blend into one, so I forget which is which. They played in that. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen, and that's not my typical kind of like dramatism. It really was dreadful. They lost it 1-0, but a weird experience, totally different to watching football in England, because there's just lots of people smoking, and you have like people that will sit there eating nuts and dropping them on the floor. It's like a Spanish thing, I think. Lots of like very typical Spanish style bits and pieces in there, in a very different stadium. Sophie was not best pleased that in the women's toilets there were no toilet paper and no toilet seats. Welcome to Spain. Not what you get at Portman Road.
Exactly. Again, another similarity between you and Hutchie, because Hutchie, I remember, once took himself off to Milan to watch Inter on his own, just to add that to his list of places he's been to watch football. So there we go. Nothing wrong with that culture, innit? Rossi, how are you? Have you ever been to Spain?
Yeah, I've been to Spain a few times. I've not gone to Benidorm. I've not done the typical Brit thing. No disrespect to anybody who's done that, but not for me, to be honest.
no disrespect, but yeah.
But not for me. That's all I've got for you. I've been to Spain a few times, been to Madrid, Barcelona, standard touristy things, really. Been to the Nou Camp, which is great. Heard about. So,
Have you done the tours, or have you seen games?
Once again,
lovely really stuff. Good. Which was better?
Bernabeu, because they won. Weirdly, Barcelona, when I went, they lost. So,
did you see Messi? And
yeah, Messi. No, was Messi there? It was 2012 I went. So Messi was there.
Messi would have been there. He was there forever, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, I don't think he maybe injured though, because I can't remember him playing. Although this was a long time, it's not that long ago. But
that's really rough, going all the way to Barcelona and the best player in the world, probably in like the peak of his prime.
Fine, you know.
Yeah.
played in England, so I watched when he played one of the English clubs. So there we go.
Oh, well. Anyway, there's our cultural tour to kick off the podcast. Shall we take another tour backwards in time to Old Trafford on Wednesday? AJ, I put it to you that I think this might be the most frustrating Town game of the season. And there's quite a long line of those, isn't there? When you look back at like Everton and Brighton and Crystal Palace and Southampton and Leicester and Bournemouth, just reading those off the top of my head. But what made this so frustrating, I think, for me, was, as I said in the intro there, Man United tried everything they could to give Ipswich Town this game. For as long as football is played, Ipswich Town will never have a better opportunity to win at Old Trafford. They got given two goals. Then they obviously had a player sent off before half-time. They had a second half against 10 men, and they were pretty woeful, I would say. It was an incredibly frustrating watch, for me at least. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can't, unfortunately. It was pretty bleak, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, they had everything kind of handed to them in a way, and that's not trying to say it in a derogatory sense, but Manchester United, in terms of what they did, offered absolutely nothing from open play. Their open play stats, when you look back through them, are literally next to nothing in terms of what they did. And Ipswich were gifted two goals. The first one is up there with one of the most comedic, ridiculous, stupid goals I think I've ever seen, ever. And the second one is, again, something that they should be doing much better with than Man United. And all of that, and then going down to 10 men for what was a really nasty, I don't want to say cynical, but a painful tackle on Amari, has all the ingredients of just giving Town every single opportunity to go and take 3 points. And the fact they couldn't get one is really disappointing. And it's that second half that stands out. I mean, the two bits that will obviously have to be reflected on, one will be the set pieces, but they were going into the break at 2-2 against 10 men and an Old Trafford that was pretty pissed off at what they'd seen in that first half. So really, that was the opportunity to go up there, turn the crowd and get something from it. And the way that they approached it was wrong. It was flat. It was disappointing. And I can kind of make exceptions for a lot of different things I've seen from Ipswich this season. This is a huge step up in terms of what they're trying to do. And I always try and caveat it. But when it comes to something like that, as Sam Horsey said after the game, it wasn't good enough.
Rossi, you weren't there. You had something else you needed to be at yesterday. So you didn't make the trip to Manchester. You watched on TV, which was, I'd imagine, a strange experience for you. What did you make of it?
I don't like watching games on TV, I've just realised, because I barely watch much football, you know, if I'm not at a game, because I just, you know, it's not for me, to be honest. I'm not an armchair fan. Once again, no disrespect if you are, because it's, you know, it's very pricey football.
So yeah.
I'm very, you know.
you're making sure you don't offend anyone today, Ross, and that's good.
Yeah, I'm just putting the caveat on there, like, no disrespect. Obviously, I wasn't expecting Town to be 1-0 up, and I was like, oh my God, what's going on here? And then obviously, we know the rest will happen. But very flat second half. And obviously, I can't do this when I'm at a game. I actually got up and made a cup of tea because I was that bored. So made a cup of tea, had a pastry, and I came back and went, oh, nothing's happened. Oh, someone's come on for it, Twitch Joe. There we go. Can he switch the game up? I think Broadhead came on, I think, or something. And I was like, oh, come on, Broadie. Come on, mate. Let's bring some stuff. Frustrating watch after meeting that second half, and yeah, very flat, as AJ said, and obviously a lot of people weren't happy.
Yeah, that first goal, AJ, and you often hear from football fans, I could have scored that, and you think, no, you couldn't, mate. You'd have herniated yourself trying to even get in that position. But this goal, I feel confident saying that even I, with one good knee and at the advanced age of 40-something, I reckon I could have scored that.
Yeah, I think we'd all given that a pretty good go. This was just really bizarre, wasn't it? And Town had adapted pretty well into the game. They'd had an early kind of sighted goal. Liam Delap flashed it wide, and you have that roar from the away end. But to be gifted one like that was just really weird. So, yeah, it's a ball over the top from Dara O'Shea. It's a little bit ahead of... It was actually Philogene attacking down that side. He gets beaten to the ball. Dorgu tries to shepherd it back to the goalkeeper, Inanna. I have no idea what they're doing. I don't know if it's a miscommunication. They're right in front of each other. They're literally inches away. Dorgu's pass is way wide. I thought it was a nutmeg on first viewing. It's not. He kind of just bends it past him, and that allows Philogene for the tap-in. I was really excited after this game. I'm not excited, but that's probably the wrong word in terms of the numbers. I looked at the stats. I was like, wow, Town's XG numbers, they're pretty good in this. Did they really have like that many? Am I missing something here? And then it dawned on me that the shot that Jaden Philogene had amounted to 0.96, which is basically the highest I think you could possibly get in terms of those kind of stats. It was a total open goal. I'm surprised he didn't do a no-look or something like that. But no, I also thought he kind of he walked it in, didn't he? He took it really close to the net, and we were thinking, like, is he going to smack it into the roof? It was a slightly bizarre finish. I think he was a bit confused how he got into that position in the first place. But yeah, a wonderful way to start the game. Kind of sums up where Man United are at, I think. They've conceded a few like that, but that probably goes to the top of the list in terms of how bad a goal it was.
Yeah, and then watching on TV at least, and you can confirm whether it felt like this in the stadium, like after that went in, there was a period where it felt like that United were just in complete disarray. And the atmosphere, at least on TV, felt like very much like, oh, Christ, we're going to lose another one sort of thing. For United, obviously, struggling all sorts of times, losing home games more than they ever have done. Was that what it felt like in the stadium?
Yeah, absolutely. And you could see it. You could see it on the replays where as soon as the ball gets carried past Onana, you've got all the fans on the camera behind the goal who all just in sync do one of these, hands behind the head in absolute despair. I'm sure they've seen it a lot of times. And that kind of 15 minutes afterwards, Town didn't really turn the screw, but they managed it so well. They got all the decisions going their way. They looked very comfortable. And as I kind of said from the start, and it was a running theme throughout the game, open play, United did nothing. And it was only when they started getting those first set pieces that they had the opportunity to kind of swing that momentum back their way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as I say, I don't want to go laboriously through the game like we maybe would do a little bit more on a Monday post-match, because it's happened. They lost, and it's incredibly frustrating. So anyway, Rossi, they obviously then they concede twice from set pieces, and that's a conversation we're going to have. Philogene gets given another goal, which is very very kind of Man United. I think it has to be the most understated two-goal haul at Old Trafford there possibly has ever been from a player. And then obviously we have the Dorgu incident with Hutchinson, which was horrific. Well, to you, yeah, I mean, I will actually say, I'll go full AJ here. It was horrendous, that tackle. Wasn't it, though? It really was. And as soon as you saw the replay, it was obvious that he had to be red carded. So you had Kieran McKenna written a script, okay, he wouldn't have written the we can see two goals from set pieces. But we've got two goals at Old Trafford. They've got a player sent off before half-time. We go in at half-time level with, you know, all the background behind United and their struggles and all that kind of stuff. You would not have written a better script for Town to go out and take the game by the scruff of neck and win in the second half, would you? And yet that's not what happened, old friend.
No, yeah, that was a really bad tackle. And once again, watching it from home, I got all the angles. If I was actually in the grounds, at pitch side taking my snappy snaps, I would have probably missed it anyway, because that's what I do. So, you know, at that point, I've been sending photos in from the first half action, so I wouldn't have known what happened. So I didn't found out after the game and saw the replays. But yeah, watched it back a few times. So I was actually sitting watching it with my missus, and she was like, ooh, that's a bad one, isn't it? And she's not really a football fan either, but she knew that was bad. And yeah, but then playing against 10 men, well, Aston Villa found out it's hard to do that, because, you know, we had 10 men against them and we were able to get a draw and obviously took the lead in that game. But as you said, Man United, with all what's going on and on the pitch, off the pitch situation, you know, that's a game to be won, especially scoring that, you know, I know we scored before the red card, but it's pretty much our game to win, which wasn't the case in the second half because it was so bad.
It was bad. It was bad. I think maybe you could argue the worst half of football of the season for Ipswich Town, given the situation they're in, the game state, as McKenna likes to say. Rossi, I've noticed, by the way, a disturbing trend in you, young man. You talk yourself down a lot. You often say, I would have missed it, of course, or that's just me. No, friend. You are good. You're talented. You are valued. You're cherished. So stop that, please. If anyone's going to talk you down, it's going to be me. All right? Deal.
That's
excellent.
Fine.
Excellent. Yeah. AJ, what was the mood like at halftime with that red card? with the comedy of errors that had given Town two goals. You must have felt sitting there in Old Trafford, and I will talk to you after we've covered the game about what covering a game is like at Old Trafford. But the mood must have been pretty buoyant among the people in the Ipswich Town business, I would say.
Yeah, I think that the nature of the two United goals were frustrated, but you go in that position and there's every chance you can go and get that result. And then you're thinking about, well, Wolves lost, didn't they, last night? And then you've got Leicester playing tomorrow and they're at West Ham. That's quite a difficult one. If we can go and just get that goal, then at least there's a famous night at Old Trafford, which would be brilliant for this entire experience in the Premier League. And B, then you're cutting the gap again and we can start to dream. And yeah, so the mood overall was really, really good. As you said, you couldn't really have asked for that much more going in their favour. It was a very clear red card. I wouldn't say it was like a cynical tackle, but it was reckless. And yeah, with that, it was pretty nasty. We didn't actually see until the replays how bad it was, I think, because it was right in front of us, but it was full speed. So you didn't really see it. It kind of looked a little bit kind of, I feel bad saying it, but amateur dramatics at first. And then you see the replay. And I was like, wow, he's got to go for that because it's caught him such a nasty way. You can see the shin. Footballers these days have shin pads that are about that big as well. Yeah. That's really got to hurt. But yeah, gifted everything to go in their favour. And it felt like maybe this was going to be one of those days because sometimes you need the rub of the green. Town have not had that pretty much at all this season, it feels. And they had everything going their way. Maybe this was going to be the time when everything would click into place. And that they'd be able to kind of turn things around, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, and the reason they didn't turn things around is because they conceded another goal from a set piece, three in this game. And I know McKenna, after the game, said that generally they've been pretty strong from set pieces, and the stats bear that out. But in this game, they weren't. So what did you make of that, AJ? Because as you say, Man United really didn't create anything from open play. So the only chance they had really was scoring. And then the winning goal ends up coming from Harry Maguire, who's one of the biggest players on the pitch. You'd think would be someone you'd definitely make sure you were covering in that scenario.
Yeah, conceded the same amount of set-piece goals in one night as they had all season, which is pretty damning from that one game and pretty good in terms of when you look at the campaign as a whole. So that's a positive, at least, when you look back on the season. But the first one, I'll just quickly talk through it. The first one, I think, was unlucky in the way it bounced off Sam. The second, they have about four opportunities to clear it. They have the Maguire header, then Dalot's shot, and then De Ligt gets into the net. Just clear the ball. There's so many opportunities to do
I would be on that. I would be fuming as well if I was Alex Palmer, because he makes two fantastic saves, and yet United players first the ball every single time.
The second one's outstanding. The way he's got so many bodies in the middle, Dalot takes that shot. It's really well aimed. It's quite central, but he still manages to get down and keep that out. Yeah, I'd be livid because there's so many opportunities to get rid of it, and it's always United chasing it down. And then the third one, who is leaving Harry Maguire unmarked on corners? And this happened on the second one as well, because he's the one who gets the header in that Palmer has to claw away the first time. And then we have it on this one. This one goes directly in, but he makes this free run. The player who ends up trying to close him down because he's making the run from outside the box is Jadon Philogene. So why is there nobody on Maguire outside of the box? And why, when he's run in, is the man closing him down Jadon Philogene? It's so muddled and messy. And we all know what Harry Maguire can do from set pieces. We've all watched England play. We've all seen him do it for Manchester United. So I don't understand it. I don't understand how Town, who've been really solid from these kind of positions before, have not just conceded three goals, but two of them are so basic. They're so easy to deal with, and you feel like in the other games that they've played, they haven't had any issues dealing with those kind of threats. These threats are much bigger and much easier to pinpoint, and they've not been able to handle it at all, and that's really disappointing.
Rossi, once Town had gone 3-2 down, were you surprised by the lack of urgency they showed? Because there was a lot of knocking the ball around and getting to a certain point and then not really kind of creating anything further from that point. It never really felt like they were threatening. And were you also surprised that McKenna left it relatively late to try and change things, switch things up? We saw Broadhead brought on, didn't we? I think the first sub was 66th minute. And I don't think, from memory, I don't think George Hurst came on until the 80th minute. I mean, we got to see George Hurst and ended up on the pitch at the same time for for the first time, I think, and which we've been calling about. But it didn't really feel like there was a lot of urgency, Rossi, in that second half, at a time when you really want them to be blood and thunder, and this is our chance to go and win at Old Trafford.
Have I froze on your screen, by the way?
You have, yeah.
But currently I can see you, but I've got black screen and deaf. So I can hear you, you can hear me. So do we just go with it and then we'll just...
Well, I can still hear you. So if you carry on talking...
Yeah, so if you're watching on video, just see me frozen. Am I looking awkward?
What
am I
looking like? You just look really pissed off, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I am pissed off because of set pieces conceded.
This should be the thumbnail.
Yeah. Very pissed off about that. I understood, like, Sammy Smodic's, that was a late, you know, change because he's obviously just come back from his injury. So he came on in like the 90th minute. But yeah, George Hurt, sure, he was like gagging to come on. You know, why not try to switch it up?
Yeah.
What you got to lose against 10 men as well? Like, obviously, you don't want to make sure Man United go and score another to extend their lead. But yeah, you don't give George Hurt, he's got 10 minutes to do what? To run around a little bit, cause a bit of a nuisance. But if he came on in the 66th minute or something, then he can bring it on and just switch it up. And Man United then will have to rethink their plan because obviously they had to do that a half time. And if you do that early change, they'll go, oh no, we've now got to come, you know, got a big striker coming on against you. So, yeah, I think there is a bit of frustration with the fan base, McKenna not making those early changes. You know, maybe something they just will look to do more often, maybe going forward. But, especially away from home, you're playing against 10 men, just go for it. And especially with Man United's history, we can see it go well. Yeah, just go for it.
Yeah, just go for it, AJ. I mean, that's a sentiment I would certainly have echoed watching. It felt like they didn't really land a glove on them when to use a boxing analogy, the opponent, you know, was on the ropes, fighting with one hand behind their back, with a crowd that was very much expecting them to lose. It was just thoroughly underwhelming and demoralising second half.
Yeah, it felt too respectful, didn't it?
Yeah.
It felt like they were not just playing against 11 men, but playing against a side that Manchester United were bad in this game. They really were. They were a really poor team. And it felt like they were playing against Liverpool or Man City and the approach that they took. And you have to be respectful to an extent of top quality players. Fernandes, Ugarte, Garnacho, when he was on the pitch, I thought was really good. Harry Maguire, players like this who have the quality. Of course they do. But when they're down to 10 men and lacking in confidence, go and attack it. And also from Town's perspective, what have they got to lose? If they'd gone and tried to attack the game and they'd lost it 4-2, then we would be having a different conversation, but not one that kind of criticises their overall approach to a disappointing second half. And we could be sat here saying at least they gave it a go and tried to go and win the game. And we'd only be saying, yeah, the set pieces are disappointing, but from open play, they really tried to attack and there's some positives there. And we didn't have that. And the United approach was properly damage limitation. The first sub they make when they're going on to 10 is take Garnacho off. That's been a whole thing over there now because he stormed down the tunnel and Amorim's called him out for his behaviour and said he'll address it in the next press conference. He's throwing his toys out of the pram. After that, they bring off Hoyland, who was pretty awful, but they didn't bring on another attacking player. They brought on Casemiro. So it's, again, solidifying it and trying to pack out the defensive midfield areas to make sure they're not conceding. And Town's approach ended up just being far too passive. They had, off the top of my head, I can remember two kind of clearish opportunities. One is where Kajusta is threaded into the box by Jack Clark and he flashes one wide. The other one's when Jack Taylor fires wide from, I think it's a short corner work to the edge of the box, and he fires wide at the post there. But it didn't feel like they had that kind of intensity and drive to get into the final third, at least try and make something happen. If you take aim from distance and then flash on wide, at least you're trying to get going and trying to get the crowd going. And it didn't happen. It felt very flat. It felt like they were trying to pick a lock that they couldn't find a way through, given that was against 10 men. That's really disappointing. But the approach was so slow. It just felt laborious. Felt a bit like they were playing on quicksand or something like that. And by the time that they had basically the last 10, maybe, plus stoppage time, where they threw on all the attacking players and the shape went out the window, it felt like United found a pattern to see out the game, because you'd have to give them credit as well. They managed it really well with 10 men.
Yeah. Fernandez, to be honest, was class though, wasn't he? For United. He's a very, very good player. Rossi, did anyone impress you for Town as a whole? I mean, I will say that I thought Jack Clark actually played pretty well. Philogene obviously scored twice. The most underwhelming kind of, as I've already said, brace at Old Trafford you'll ever see. But again, I thought, you know, he was decent. Axel was good, I thought. And obviously Alex Palmer made some fantastic saves again. Anyone sort of stand out for you from that performance?
Once again, in moments, but for the full 90, no one really did, to be honest. As that was just a frustrating watch, especially that second half. And maybe they've got the problem. We've got three similar players playing in those position behind the striker, because you've got Jack Clark, Virgin, and Murray Hutchinson. They're very similar players. They're dribbly boys, aren't they?
They're all quite lightweight as well, aren't they? They're not physical.
Well, so obviously, yeah, talented, you know, players, but maybe together, maybe, I don't know. Sometimes I don't think it works. And Amari in the 10 role, not for me. Obviously, he's just fitting in there at the moment because we haven't got injuries in that position. I just like him on the right and he can cut in and stuff like that. But yeah, good to see Jack Clark sort of now getting into what we've seen of him before with Sunderland. It's still early days for him. Yeah, Philogene, two easy goals really for him. But yeah, I'm just deflated really, to be honest. I think it was just a sort of flat sort of second half. The first half was like, yeah, end-to-end stuff in a way. And then second half was just, as I said, I made a cup of tea and had a chinwag with my missus. And then, still a game going on. I couldn't do that. Obviously, if I was at the game, I'll be just take my snappy snaps, probably just taking pictures of just random things, probably instead of the action, because there was nothing happening in my end. And it was wet. So I was actually pleased I didn't go to the game because I would have got very wet. But yeah, just like as you said, Palmer made some good saves. Once again, the cliche, you know, what if we had him earlier in the season, how many points would he have saved us and all that jazz? But yeah, a disappointing night, to be honest.
AJ, player ratings. I'm sure you're aware that when you're off, we had player ratings gate. Have you? Have you got a view on this? So, for those of you who don't know, Stewie was on player ratings for the Villa game. Was it Villa?
Tottenham.
Spurs, because Alex was in Spain, and Stewie, from the pressure, the overwhelming pressure of the public, changed his ratings. You got a view on that, AJ, as the man who normally does the ratings?
So, in terms of this game in particular, I don't know. I didn't watch it. I've seen some of the highlights. I think that there have been some comments since that have come in and been like, oh, you know what, Philogy wasn't actually that bad. He was all right. In terms of the changing of it, I have done it before. I usually will. It'll be like after I've published it and I'll go back and be like, oh, actually, I'm not sure. The note at the bottom of the player ratings, yeah. I thought was interesting. I like that. The little like, sorry, after public pressure, these ratings have been altered. Yeah, fair enough. Usually if I've like left it after an hour, I'll just double down and you know what I'll say. You know, yeah, you're wrong. I'm right. I'm the one doing these ratings. But yeah, if there's something kind of in the immediate aftermath, I might go back through and have a look, but not usually if I leave it too much longer. But yeah, at the end of the day, you listen to the public and maybe Stu had that kind of reflection going through thinking, oh, actually, I'm not too sure. But it is hard as well when you're doing all these different things. I've covered a few games, well, a lot of games solo in the last 18 months and a few in the Premier League. And it's not easy when you're trying to juggle all these things.
Yeah, I think people would genuinely be surprised by how little of the actual game you get to watch, particularly when you're flying solo. Mm. You boys have got so much to do. You just kind of constantly like sort of up and down looking at your screen, aren't you? And because you have to hit deadlines and stuff. What did you make of the McKenna and Morsey after the game, AJ? Because quite often, I mean, clearly Town have lost a lot of games this season. But it felt to me like the reaction was slightly more angry / frustrated / introspectively, we weren't good enough, which is not something that we've heard a lot of this season. But I think McKenna and certainly Sam Morsey said pretty much exactly that, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard or wasn't in the McKenna press conference. So with that one, I'm kind of basing it on the written side. And I think that almost makes it harder because it's the way you say things as well. And with Sam, you could see that with players a lot of the time, and it's totally understandable after a defeat, no matter what it is or when it is or who it's against, a lot of the time, especially with Ipswich, and it's understandable, as I've said, the response is, we're disappointed, we did these things wrong, but we've got to go in on Monday and go again, and we've got to keep positive. And we've had that a lot, and it becomes a bit of a cliche. You can sometimes write these quotes before you've spoken to people. And Sam being a reflection of Kieran McKenna means that they're very similar in that sense. And they were in this one as well, but it was a total opposite where there was no kind of positive leanings towards it. It was no kind of, this was bad, but we've got to get up and go again. Mm. And we come in with a positive mindset on Monday morning, things like that. It wasn't good enough. It was really disappointing. We let the fans down. Yeah. And that this was the first time I'd kind of seen that shift, I'd say. I haven't spoken to Sam and I haven't really seen that much from Kieran, where it's been like that, where it's been kind of that firm and harsh and critical. Possibly that would be a good thing in the long run. Maybe that's what you need, a bit of tough love. Mm. But yeah, I think it's a pretty kind of damning statement of where they are at the moment and where this kind of performance and the campaign has ended up. And also, again, it's when you listen to it, because sometimes when you read these things, it can come across as, oh, here we go again. It's the same story as every week. But it was pretty firm this time, and there's definitely kind of that change in the mood that we've not seen from previous weeks.
Rossi, you're having all sorts of trouble, aren't you, with your computer? You vanished. Your computer died. It shut itself down. And now you're back in with us. Just on the bigger picture, Rossi, before we move on and talk about other stuff, 11 games left. We said before, Spurs and United, back-to-back games, they both felt like opportunities. They didn't get anything from them. And yes, Wolves and Leicester both lost. But it is, and I know they still have to play Wolves and Leicester and other teams on the run-in, but it's starting to feel a little bit now like we might be moving towards the inevitable. Or am I being too negative there?
No, not at all. It's just how I currently lock my laptop on its last legs, because some moments so far in the last few weeks. It's every time I turn my laptop on, and AJ knows this, it makes a random noise. And it's just, I don't know what it is. So I may have to go to IT, Heathie.
So, yeah. Has it been soaked with rain?
No, it hasn't. No, I don't. I actually leave it in the room, in the media room.
Okay.
It doesn't get soaked in rain. I think it's just, obviously, we've had these for a while. But yeah, it's on its last legs, like Ipswich Town. So yeah, 11 games to go. I'm just trying to think where the wins are going to come from. And I hate to say that. You know, I want to back these boys. You know, you know, we want to support them. But where can you see these wins coming? Obviously, we've got the FA Cup, a nice little break, which could be a good sort of switch up. And then we've got Crystal Palace away. They're not in Forest at home, obviously, in the Premier League. Can we get points from those? But then we've got to rely on Wolves dropping points, and you don't want that. When you're going into the run-in, you don't want to rely on teams dropping points, and they're already 5 points, pretty much 6 points because of the goal difference. So, yeah, we just got to go into every game praying, if you're into that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. AJ, I hesitate to say this, but I wonder if the uncomfortable truth when we look back at the end of the season is, as much as Ipswich Town gave it their best shot, you know, they've largely competed. We've seen some really good games. But I just wonder if maybe at the end of the season, we'll just look back and say, look, all things being equal, they just maybe just weren't good enough. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but it's a huge step up. And a lot of these players are playing in the Premier League for the first time, the best league in the world. And for me, it always just feels like they're just lacking something. Do you know what I mean? At the very highest level, that means they can't get these results.
Yeah, and I think at this point, in a way, I've kind of come to terms with that. And when you do, maybe it's because I'm not a natural Ipswich fan. Obviously, I have all the connections with this, and I want to see this team doing as well as absolutely possible, because it's what's best for everyone. But when you kind of step back from it all and realise what they've had to do in the last 18 months, where, and that counts as the recruitment, that counts as the step up in players that have had to jump up from League One, many of them into the Premier League, and the staff as well. Other teams have done it where they've come up into the Premier League and they've been able to survive and kick on. And other teams have done back-to-back promotions where they've been able to survive. But this is a very different Premier League. And we saw this last year where I'd say a good team was probably relegated in Luton with the way that they approached that. I think in other seasons, Luton would have stayed up. In other seasons, I think Ipswich should have had a really good hand at staying up. And it makes you realise how big the gap is. And that probably, and I don't want it to come as too kind of conclusive, there's no guarantee that Ipswich are going to be relegated. But look at the teams that they would probably at this stage be coming down with. Leicester in disarray, Southampton, there's so much negativity. And it kind of points you towards a more positive place for me. I feel so confident going ahead with this football club, where it feels like when you get on the ladder and kind of the Premier League Championship thing, and you're in that kind of parachute payment thing, which you've seen with other clubs, and you look at the teams coming up from the Championship, Leeds, Burnley, Sheffield United probably put Ipswich into that position, and the fact that they are much more stable than a lot of teams who bounce between the two, I just feel really positive overall. It's been an amazing journey so far. I think people have to make the most of what's coming ahead. 11 big games, fun games, a couple of really good trips, Chelsea, Newcastle, things like that. There's no reason why they can't stay up. It'll be really difficult, of course, with the fact that Wolves know how to win, and Ipswich seemingly at the moment are struggling with that. But I think there is kind of a sense of coming to terms with things, and that will take longer for some people, of course, naturally, because there is such a desire and clamour to stay in this league and not to drop back down and be back to some of those games and some of those experiences. But I think the bigger picture when it arrives will be that this club is in a really fantastic place. So that's the main thing. And yeah, there are disappointing factors. I think we all expected Ipswich to improve as the season went on. And it feels like possibly they've regressed a little bit. Like the last 6 weeks, I think, have been pretty disappointing in terms of how they've approached things. And they're not a club that are above criticism as well. That's understandable. We have to be able to sit here and say, they've done this wrong, this needed to be better, this part of the recruitment wasn't good enough, these players haven't stepped up, etc., etc., etc. It's not above that, but there also has to be an equal amount of balance and acceptance of how hard this has been. You can't lean to one way or the other, as we've seen maybe some of the national outlets do in the last week or so. You can't overly criticise a club that have had to make the step up Ipswich have, and you can't also ignore the shortcomings of what the season's been so far. But we can't delve too deep into that, probably with 11 games to go, with 33 points on a piece still to play for. But the main thing, I think, is just enjoying it and supporting these guys who are having to make one hell of a step up into incredibly competitive games, and enjoying the journey of it all.
Well said, sir. There are still 11 games left. Nothing is decided yet. And let's see what happens, shall we? And then we can do the final analysis at the end of the season. In terms of enjoying the journey, AJ, before we depart this this game, you didn't particularly enjoy the journey to Old Trafford and back with Stewie. What was it like covering a game, though? I mean, for all the obviously struggles that Man United have had this season, and generally since Sir Alex has left, they are still Man United. Old Trafford is still probably, what, maybe with Anfield, the most iconic stadium in English football. What was it like covering a game there?
Yeah, for starters on the journey, for those of you who didn't know, should take from Cambridge to Old Trafford, it should take about 3 hours. So from where Stew is, it should take about four. Overall, it took 5 hours from Cambridge and 6 hours from where Stew is to get up to Old Trafford. We had every single diversion, every bit of traffic. It was an absolute nightmare. We allowed plenty of time and we still made it in after team news. Stop laughing, Ross. Stew can back me up on this. He will come in equally as dramatic when he's back on the pod. I'll tell you that. It
Ross
was really
just,
not.
Ross
not.
Is just pleased he wasn't with you, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so. I think when I was talking to Stu, he said, in terms of journeys he's done, it's probably the worst aside from Southampton earlier in the season. I was very happy I wasn't part of that one, but it was pretty horrible. The experience of covering Old Trafford, I'd heard different bits and pieces of, it's pretty run down, it's not great, it's not an amazing press experience. I thought it was quite nice in terms of the press setup. The food's not going to go incredibly high on my ratings because the chicken was hard as a rock. But in general, was a nice setup there. But actually sitting there and covering a game at Old Trafford, as someone who has kind of more Liverpool-leaning backgrounds, it's not some sort of like career dream or something like that, but it is really impressive when you see 70-odd thousand people sat there watching an Ipswich Town game. It felt weirdly flat, to be honest. I know some of the Man United reporters were saying it was the best atmosphere we've had so far this season. I thought, wow, that is a low bar for where they are at the moment. But to be able to sit there and cover a game in a venue like that, and also after the match, the mix zone's in the middle of nowhere, so you kind of have to walk around the outside of the pitch, go pitch side. And you kind of had a moment where I was kind of stood in the dugout there thinking, oh, wow, this is what it would be like then. In the Old Trafford away dugout, kind of pitch level, watching the players, the Ipswich players, doing their warm down exercises. I took a photo pitch side, and the Town players are still on there. Nathan Broadhead looked at me, was like, what? He was really confused as to why. I think he thought I was like specifically taking a photo of him. And he didn't realize that I wasn't. But yeah, that was a nice experience anyway. Probably a ground that needs a bit of TLC, but that's part of the Premier League fun, isn't it?
The way United are going, they'll start selling bits of the ground off. They're in all sorts of trouble there, aren't they, with what they're doing in behind the scenes. It always seems to be the little guy, though, doesn't it, that suffers? Not the people on the massive wages. Get rid of Maureen in the canteen. That's the approach. Rossi, let's park this one then. Let's park the Premier League for the time being and everything we've just talked about, because the FA Cup up next on Monday night. That's not annoying at all, because I'm off. They moved the game, didn't they? That's not irritating at all. Anyway, they're playing Nottingham Forest away, fifth round of the FA Cup. Town haven't been further than this, I don't think. Well, I don't know the stats, but certainly for a long time, we know Town have been rubbish in the FA Cup. And this feels like we're moving towards something that could genuinely be an opportunity to do something special in the FA Cup. But you do still have 11 games left in the Premier League as you try and stay in the Premier League. So I guess the question would be, how do Town approach this game, Rossi? Do you want to see McKenna put out his strongest team at Forest on Monday?
I don't think he will. I think it'll be a mix. I think it will be stronger than Coventry. I don't think he's going to do 11 changes like he did. I think he'll kill Alex Palmer in goal and then maybe switch out a few players, but not, you know, 4-11, because I don't think it works when you play against this opposition. I think it works somewhat against Coventry because, you know, Coventry are a good championship side, but I think we just had too good of players to, you know, beat them in the end. But Forest, they may make a few changes, I'm sure, but they're still a Premier League outfit away from home. I think at home, I think I'll be more, well, actually, no, not at home, because we can't win games at home. So actually, maybe I'm more confident away from home. But yeah, you know, Forest are doing so well. Once again, maybe they've got eyes on Champions League football.
Exactly. So, yeah.
But they may go, you know what, we're close to getting to the FA Cup, you know, quarterfinal, semi-final, Wembley. So depends on how they're going to approach this game. But I hope Kieran Kerr doesn't make too many changes, but I'm sure he will.
How would you be approaching this, AJ? Because as Rossi says there, there's maybe a chance that Forest are going to be less interested in this in terms of what they're chasing. As well, clearly, you know, a game away from the quarterfinals, two games from potentially playing at Wembley. This is exciting stuff now.
Yeah, but plenty of changes for me. Earn the right to play. These players have earned the right to be at this stage because we've had very similar teams against Bristol Rovers and against Coventry. And to then say, right, well, you've done all this hard work. Off you pop now. Liam Delap starting this one. Just feels a bit brutal and say that across the board. Especially when there's a lot of players here who aren't getting much of a look in the Premier League. I know that it is about winning games of football, but when are you going to have an opportunity for Wolfie and Burgess and Townsend and probably Jack Taylor at this point and others to start games? That kind of core behind the front four, I think, are already pretty set in stone. Maybe Mass will be another one that will be in there, given the injuries that we've got in kind of those midfield areas. The front bit and the wide players now become a bit more tricky because you've got, say, Jack Clark, who's had a lot of opportunities in the Cup, but he's starting in the Premier League now. And then you'd think it'll maybe Nathan Broadhead, things like that. That's maybe a bit more of a dilemma, but there's kind of this FA Cup core they've got, isn't it? Where you've got players who've played regularly in this competition. Ben Godfrey, who probably needs a confidence boost after what happened against Spurs. Mass, Taylor, others like that. So I think the changes will benefit Town in the long run. I still think that it doesn't make sense to go necessarily full strength. And look, these players have impressed in what they've done so far. George Hurst, for example, has been excellent in the Cup. Really good performance against Coventry, and Jack Clark, another one, really fantastic. So I'd be surprised if it's a full 11, but I think you're probably still looking at 8-9 changes as a minimum. And I do think that's probably the best way to approach it, because I'd say Forest are going to do the same.
It's presses today, isn't it, AJ? So you've got Kieran. Which player are you talking to?
Luke Wolfenden.
Okay, well, that's maybe a sign that Wolfie will be back in the side for Monday. Maybe
he has captaining.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's done both of the last rounds as captain. So
yeah,
nice for him.
Superb. All right, I'm not going to ask you to do predictions and stuff, because I just can't be bothered. And it's the FA Cup. We just don't know, do we? We don't know what sort of side there's going to be put out, all that kind of stuff. So, Rossi, in terms of looking ahead, going forward, the next time after Monday, the Ipswich Town play Nottingham Forest, there's going to be something big happening afterwards. And that's KOA Live 2, baby. Yes, Town might be on the way out the Premier League, but could still be fun. Still some tickets available. Not many, though. So if you do want to be there at the Bass in Ipswich, March 15th, after the Nottingham Forest game, make sure you get your ticket now. Me and you, Rossi, we went and had a little recon, didn't we, at the venue on Wednesday, when the boys were having their hellish trip to Old Trafford. So we thought we'd give you a little insight as to what you can expect on the night. And without further ado, let's give a premiere to this KOA Live 2 preview, shall we, old friend? Here we go then, friends. This is what you can expect at KOA Live 2. Hello, friends. We are just days away from KOA Live 2, our second ever live podcast event here in Ipswich. It's going to be at the Baths in Ipswich after the Nottingham Forest game, Saturday, March 15th. There's still a few tickets left, so make sure you've got them if you haven't yet. But we thought we'd come down to the venue, me and the boy Rossi, and have a quick look, give you a little insight as to what you can expect on the night itself. Let's go and have a look. Okay, hello, friends. We're now inside the Bass in Ipswich at the box office where you hand in your ticket on the night. Have I mentioned there are still tickets available? There are still a few tickets available. A few of the acts behind me here that have played this great venue. I'm going to give you a bit more detail about that in a minute. We're going to have a look in the main room, though. We're all looking forward to seeing you on the night. So let's go and have a little look, shall we? This is the big room at the Bass in Ipswich. I'm going to do like a Premier League style tunnel walk and talk now as Ross walks backwards into this big room here at the Bass. Obviously, they're setting up a musical event at the moment. We're not going to need, I don't think, the crowd barriers on the night, but you never know. So here we are, boys. This is the main room at the Bass. This is where we'll be on the night. A historic venue in Ipswich, formerly hosted Ed Sheeran. Where in Suffolk hasn't Ed Sheeran played? Also, the likes of Led Zeppelin and Rod Stewart are some big names, obviously none bigger than KOA. So this is where we'll be on the night. Can't wait to see you. Who's that behind the bar?
Oh, you caught me, Heathie. As you know, you can't take me anywhere. Where is a bar? I'm just checking out what's on stock. And there's plenty on offer for you, KOA Army. Can't wait to see you. Get your beer, get your soft drinks as well. And also, we haven't mentioned our great sponsor for tonight, for the event, which is Ginger Pickle. Tony Southgate and the team. And I've heard, Tony, that Stu may treat you to maybe a red stripe, could treat you to a lager, an IPA, a cider, an ale, maybe even a vodka or rum. Whatever you fancy, my friend. There's also soft drinks available for the drivers out there. So we can't wait to see you. KOA Live 2 at the Baths in Ipswich. Get your tickets now. What's happening over there?
Yes, Ross, it is me. You caught me. One thing you didn't mention there, very important. There's not one bar. There's two bars here at the Bass. Two sets of taps, so no problem at all in getting a drink on the night. And if you're asking, friends, mine very much is a red stripe. So one red stripe for me, please. Thank you very much. Looking forward to it. Here we are then, Ross. We're on the stage itself. This is the big space behind us. Obviously, it looked different on the night. Lots of chairs in here, lots of KOA Army in here. I can't wait, mate. How about you?
Oh, I'm buzzing, mate. KOA Army, going to fill that floor. I have had a cheeky pint already just to get started. So, yeah, if you want to buy us a beer on the night, then brilliant. Can't wait to share nonsense with Ipswich Town fans. So bring it on.
They have made the mistake of leaving the bar on and open and unattended, though. So we're going to go and take advantage of that. We will see you, friends, on Saturday, March 15th.
I'm not sure that we mentioned booze enough in that clip, Rossi. That did seem to be the kind
Trip
of
responsibly, obviously.
Exactly. And Ross, just to stress, Ross was joking. He hadn't had a pint. although the taps were on, which was dangerous. But that was fun, wasn't it, Ross? It was nice to see the venue. Nice to have an idea of how it's going to look on the night. Speak to the guys who are going to be doing the technical stuff behind the scenes. I love a little bit of a walk and talk as well. So that was good. But it was good fun, wasn't it?
Very good fun, yeah. Although the mic didn't work at first.
Yeah.
So we had to actually ask the technical guy. I went, hey, mate, it's not your microphone. I should know what my microphone does. It because we've got a new one, ladies and gentlemen. Got right in front of me. If you're watching the video, got a nice little blue little muff for it now as well. So links up with Richard Town and Coway. But yeah, just nice to see the venue once again. Obviously, it will be set up with, you know, stairs, chairs. So yeah, I'm looking forward to just seeing all the Coway army. I know I've really seen the list already of people coming. And yeah, it's going to be great to see you. And yeah, get your tickets now.
Absolutely. As I say, just a few tickets left now. Night sponsored by Ginger Pickle and Tony Southgate. AJ, how are you feeling ahead of your debut at a live podcast event? You're going to be on stage in front of a bunch of people having a bit of fun. You looking forward to it? Or are you absolutely terrified?
Oh, a bit of both, yeah. When you say it like that, it sounds quite daunting, doesn't it? But you know what? This is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to it as well. Is there booze? Sorry.
There might be some booze available on the night. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's limited amounts.
Two bars. Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to double check that one. My favorite bit on the video was the consecutive Hello Friends introductions that you did right at the start. I really hope. I assume you are going to kick off the show with one of those.
Well, of course, absolutely.
Yeah. Really looking forward to it. Will be brilliant.
When you've got a catchphrase, you can't say it too much, can you, Rossi, and all that jazz, my friend.
Yeah, good old shout out to the toilet.
Exactly.
There was another one. I don't know if this got brought up. Stu mentioned this meal on Wednesday. Bless him is another one.
I've noticed you often use bless him when referring to Leif Davis, by the way.
Yeah.
You obviously feel sort of quite paternal towards Leif Davis.
Yeah. Patronising a little him. Though, isn't it?
Bless him, little Leif there. Sometimes he's ill. Bless him. Right then, friends, we better take our leave because Alex has got to get to a press conference and we've got various bits to do ahead of this weekend. We should mention, of course, Rossi, there's a big game for the Town ladies on Sunday, isn't there? So there's no men's game. But the ladies are playing on Sunday. It's away, unfortunately. But it's a big game for them, isn't there, as they move, hopefully, towards promotion this season.
Yeah, big game against hashtag United away. So if they win, famous last words, but that'll be a massive result in terms of the title deciding. So I'm not saying they're going to win it there, but you know, the gap will get bigger. So big game. So if you fancy a bit of footy on Sunday, if you're on, you know, in Essex, head down the hashtag and watch the women play. So bring on.
Yeah, we'll have some updates on them coming up on our site in due course. Tom Cann went to the press conference last night, spoke to Joe Sheehan and a couple of the ladies players there. So we'll have plenty of coverage of that. And then, of course, building up to the game on Monday night. There won't be, obviously, a podcast on Monday morning like they would normally be because they haven't played. So we'll be back on Tuesday morning, I'd imagine, to break down the Forest game. Just a warning, I will probably be quite hungover, friends, because it's my wife's birthday on Monday, which is why I'm not around. We're going away. And so we will be celebrating on Monday, and I'm not sure I'll be any fit state to host a podcast on Tuesday. But hey, we'll see. It'll be exciting, won't it? And hopefully Town have got a result and we can all feel excited as we look forward to a quarter final of the FA Cup. And the FA Cup, when's the draw, AJ? I put you on the spot there.
No. I don't know.
Okay, well, we'll find out. I'm sorry, that was incredibly poor form.
Yeah, you've ruined me here. I don't know. Maybe I'll be able to...
It'd probably be on Monday night, wouldn't it? I'd have thought.
Yeah, it'll probably be at some really inconvenient, uncomfortable time. Maybe it'll be one of those where they'll do it like the City Ground or something. It'll be done right in front of us. Can I find it before we finish? Sunday, March. They'll be done before Town play.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, Sunday, March 2nd, after the game against Manchester United. After the game against Man United, Fulham on Sunday. Okay. So that's the one to keep an eye out on. Town will know what they might have in store if they beat Forest before they play that game.
Indeed. Okay. Interesting. Just a reminder then, friends, before we go, to support our sponsor, use the code KOA at stardustspirits.co.uk for 20% off. There's some truly excellent stuff on their website. They've got all sorts of manner of concoctions from your whiskey, your rum, your speculoos, influenced alcoholic drinks. They've got flavored vodkas. They've got all sorts of stuff. So go and have a look. Hopefully we're going to have our greedy little hands on some samples soon enough. Of course, make sure you've got your tickets for Carry Alive 2 if you haven't yet. You can get those. There's various links out there for them. And also, friends, I'm wearing the KOA trucker hat today because I'm having a bad hair day. But this is our most popular item on the KOA merch shop. Very nice indeed. And it's going to keep my head nice and warm today as I host this podcast. So if you do fancy some KOA merch, go and get hold of that. And just a reminder as well, friends, if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, that'd be great because it helps lift us in the visibility, algo-wise, in the charts and helps more people join the KOA army. Right, and friends, final podcast of the week is in the books. Pressers this afternoon. AJ's covering those. Ladies games to look forward to this weekend. And then obviously the boys will be at the game on Monday night. And we'll be back with you on Tuesday when Ipswich Town may be in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Have a great weekend, whatever you're doing. And we'll be back next week to speak to you again.